This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
It's the Blue Jay A Day pregame show, and Pat Henkin joins us, special assistant to Alex Anthopoulos and twice a bullpen coach, but of course we remember him more for the 238 games he started for the Blue Jays, and he came out ahead of 107 of them, Cy Young Award winner back in 1996. Pat, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate having you on.
Oh, you know what? I love coming on. Thanks, Mike.
I know you do, but it's always nice. Always nice when you do it. So tonight, it's got to be kind of a, I'm thinking a bit of a, an insult to you that we're going into Game 7 of a World Series, and we're talking about the bullpens, and the managers are talking about getting their starting pitchers through three or four innings, I hope. That's not what starting pitchers are supposed to be all about.
I know, I tell you what. I mean, the days of Jack Morris lining up against Smoltz and throwing CGs, you know, you never know, man. Guthrie's an innings eater, and, you know, he could have some easy innings, and next thing you know, he could be in the sixth or seventh inning. I tell you what, Hudson, too. You know, they talk about how they want to get these guys out in the fourth inning, but, you know, when a guy's rolling, you're not taking him out. So, yeah, it's obviously the game's much shorter now with these bullpens. You know, here's one for you, Mike. Why don't they start the closer? Why don't they match up the first three innings and then bring in the starter and have him pitch from the third inning all the way?
You know,
anyone
what?
Ever thought of that?
I'll bet you it's because they're afraid. It's the same reason that a manager won't bring in his best reliever in his biggest spot if it comes up in the sixth or seventh inning. They're afraid that in the ninth, you won't have that guy and you might need him. But the idea of starting the closer and having him go till he gets in trouble, I have no problem with that at all.
So you'd be mixing and like last year's staff, we'd have Jansen starting with Loop, Cecil, and guys like that coming in the second and third inning. And then, boom, here comes Dickey for the fourth inning, and he'll finish it up.
That would be very cool. I wonder if any agent would ever allow that to happen, because then you'd have no more saves, and your starting pitcher's not going to get as many wins as he ordinarily would. But it's an interesting idea. With a bullpen like you have in Kansas City, I got to think that there's a temptation with, you know, they're all fully rested. Herrera and Davis have had 2 days off. Holland has had three, I think. Let them go three each and forget about the starting pitcher.
You can't do that.
Why not?
No. Yeah, you can't. I know Tony started doing that in Oakland that 1 year. Remember?
Yep.
We had guys going on three-day rotations. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, you know what? You got to go with what got you here. And this formula's worked so well for both clubs all year long. I can't see anything changing tonight. You know, it should be a great game. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. As a starting pitcher, when you go into a game knowing that first sign of trouble, you're out, how much extra pressure does that put on you beyond the fact that it's Game 7 of the World Series?
You know what, Mike? I was scheduled to pitch Game 7 before Joe hit the home run.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember that. But I remember laying in bed before Game 6, and I remember thinking, what is Cito thinking? You know, pitching me in Game 7. You know, obviously I realized that Stewart and Guzman both got two starts and I only got one. That's why he did it. But that being said, I remember just thinking my approach was going to be, you know what? It's Harry Holstaff today. Everybody's available. Every pitcher is going to be available. I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to lose that game. I mean, if I give up one or two runs early, I might get hooked and the rest is out of your hands at that point. So I tried to take the pressure off me by saying, hey, I got the entire bullpen behind me. I felt like there was more pressure on those days when the starter went one inning the day before, and you're laying in bed thinking, wow, you know what? I need to go six or seven innings because our bullpen is completely done, and there's no help out there tomorrow. So, I mean, that's kind of the way I looked at it.
It's a good way to look at it, and hopefully that's the way Guthrie and Tim Hudson are looking at it too, but there's also that pride as well. You want to go out there, and you want to go nine, and you want to not have to have anybody worry about using the bullpen. Just pin their ears back and win the World Series all by yourself.
Yeah, that Royals bullpen, that reminds me of the Ward Hanke show we had in 92. Mm-hmm. You know, we were playing six-inning games back then. And, you know, Gillick and Cito and that entire front office with Paul and everybody there. you know, I think they recognized that a long time ago, how valuable that was. Dwayne Ward got so many big outs for us in the seventh and eighth inning. I can't even tell you how big and valuable he was. And obviously, the bullpen in Kansas City's done the same thing. I mean, it's just, it's going to come down to the bullpen again tonight. You're right.
Yeah, well, the amazing thing about Wardo that year is he threw over 100 innings and had an ERA of .195. I mean, it was just, it was sensational what he was able to. You don't see relievers putting up that kind of innings anymore back in, like Ward did back in 92. And then the next year, he sets a Blue Jays all-time saves record after Henke leaves, and it's a record that's still standing.
Yeah. You know, nothing against Hank. I loved Hank. He was a great teammate. He was a great closer. He had excellent fastball command and good changeup command. But Dwayne Ward, I think, and I've told people many times that I thought he was the best relief pitcher I ever played with. And the reason I bring that up and say it is because, like I said, man, in the seventh and eighth inning, he just got so many big outs. He'd come in, he pitched, he was so durable, he pitched all the time. He'd come in the seventh inning and you'd hand the ball to him. And I mean, there were guys, I remember, you were surprised they made contact because he struck out so many hitters. And he was just a fierce competitor. And, you know, if you wanted to have a mold for a relief pitcher, I think it'd have to be Dwayne Ward. From my experiences, he had a great mentality about coming into them from that bullpen.
And I think, too, you know, how some relievers will have their little shticks. Dwayne never had a shtick to intimidate anybody, but he came out, and by the time he threw his second warm-up pitch, he's already drenched in sweat on the mound, and he was just wild enough that no one could ever get comfortable in the box against him, although he didn't wind up walking that many people.
No, he didn't. He was impressive. He had an impressive fastball with movement, and he had a wipeout breaking ball. You know, he was, like I said, as good as anybody I ever played with as far as coming in and putting fires out. He got big double plays. He got big strikeouts. I remember one time he came in. I can't remember if it was Minnesota. I think it might have been Minnesota. It was like bases loaded. It was all my runners, and he came in and got out of it. I mean, that's just such a rare thing. You know, I remember it from 15, 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, that would be something. It would have had to have been, well, it might have been 93. Might have been 92.
Yeah, no, it was 93. No, not 93. It was 90. No, you're right. Maybe it was 93. I don't remember. I just remember him coming in. I think it was 92. He came in, and I had all my runners on, and he came in and got out of it, and he was really, really good. He was really good.
Yeah, that absolutely true. I'm going to see if I can find that game for you. We're with Pat Henken, and it is 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590 if you want to get a chance to talk to Pat on the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. We're getting ready for Game 7 of the World Series, the Kansas City Royals and the San Francisco Giants. Do you have a horse in this race? Do you have a team that you'd like to see win the game one way or the other?
You know, I think I'm like most fans. I think that nothing against San Francisco. It's just that they've already won two in the last 4 years, and this would be 3-5, which is super impressive. But I guess I always favor the American League. You know, I spent the bulk of my career almost 13 out of the 14 or 12 out of 13 in the American League. So I've always kind of been an American League guy. I think that if I had to say and I had to go on the record, I'd say I hope Kansas City wins.
All right. I think I do too. I mean, it's just because they've been so much fun. I mean, the way they're winning games, and I know people are going to overstate the aspect of the speed because they really haven't stolen that many bases since that wild card game where they went nuts. But the bullpen, the defense, the fact that they just seem so relentless. It's such a pleasure to watch them play.
Yeah, their outfield defense has really shined, I felt, you know, through the playoffs. Some of the plays they make down the line and some of the balls they cut off in the gap and just the aggressiveness of coming in on balls. It's almost like an instinctive thing. I don't really know if you can get that much better at it by practicing on those jumps and stuff, but those guys seem to get good jumps. And, you know, I think the guy at first base has done a nice job, too. I think it's one of those unheralded positions where they think you can throw a DH-type player there. And, you know, he can be a very, very valuable defender for your club. And, you know, it makes me think of Olerud. And I remember when we traded him, you know, I remember the infielders telling me how bummed they were because they felt that John saved them five errors each, at least during the course of a year, because of how he could funnel the ball and keep the ball in front of him and scoop the ball and all that. So it's a very, very important position. Sometimes I think baseball as an industry overlooks that.
Yeah, I agree with you a lot. And a lot of that, I mean, the Tampa Bay getting out ahead and signing James Loney to be their first baseman in the last few years has really helped defensively a lot. I found the game, Pat. Your memory is almost perfect. It was May 23rd, 93, home to the Twins. You went 7 2/3 innings. You left with two on and two out. You give an infield single to Chuck Knobloch, and you walk Kirby Puckett. And then Wardo came on and walked Kent Herbeck to load the bases. And then he got out of it. He popped up some guy named Winfield to end the inning.
Yeah, Wardo was pretty exciting. If you were a pitcher, you're like, oh, the gate opens. Here comes Wardo. Beautiful.
Yeah, already drenched in sweat. A lot of people lining up to talk to you at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. A long distance one, 888-666-0590. So I want to give them a chance. We got Pat Henken with us. It's the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. And, well, let's go to the phones. Pat, first up is Alan in Toronto, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Alan. Say hi to Pat Henken.
Hi, Pat. Very eager to talk to you. What an iron man you were. What an iron man you were. 183 consecutive starts from April 17th, 93 to August 24th, 98. And your three All-Star selections, too, in 93, 94, 97. And your Cy Young Award in 96 with a 20-10 record. You edged out Andy Pettitte. That was really something. Wanted to talk to you about the 93, Game 3 of the 93 World Series. You went head-to-head against Danny Jackson, and you had a four-run lead in the fourth inning. Molitor drove in two runs in the first, and he hit a home run in the fourth. The only hit you allowed was Eisenreich singling home John Kruk. Is it easier to pitch when you have a lead as opposed to walking a tightrope 0-0? It must have been hell for Jack Morris in Game 7 of the 91 World Series. I guess you're a lot more relaxed when you have a lead, don't you, in the first or third inning, whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge difference because, you know, solo homer doesn't give up the lead, doesn't tie the game. There's lots of factors. You know, the defense plays more relaxed. I think the relievers are more relaxed when you have a big lead. The starting pitcher is definitely more relaxed when you have a lead. So it's a huge advantage, there's no doubt. And when you score four runs early like that, for me, I was pitching in my first World Series on the road. Series was tied 1-1. I was in a jam in the first inning. I remember the ball was down the right field line, and Molitor was playing first, and he never played first that year. And, you know, he was playing first, and he came up to me. The ball went down the line. Kruk doubled down the right field line, and he came out, handed me the ball, and he said, man, he goes, I'm sorry, man. He goes, I should have had that. And I remember just thinking, you know, no, you shouldn't have had that. It was hit hard. It was down the line. Long story short, I got out of the inning, and the big thing was that the runs help. I mean, there's no question about it. It makes you relax. It makes you breathe a little easier. We had that type of offense. You guys remember. I mean, it was just an explosive type of offensive team.
Yeah, absolutely it was. And you know, thinking back, it really had to be a huge weight off for you. First of all, the Blue Jays, you know, it's a 1-1 series going into Philly, and you're about to make your first World Series start, and you get a three-run lead before you even throw a pitch. How much pressure does that take off?
Oh, it was awesome. It was incredible. It was incredible. And you know what's funny is I remember when I played for the Cardinals my 1 year, I remember Andy Bennis telling me this, that it was the kiss of death if you batted before you pitched. I said, what? He's like, if you bat when we're on the road, I said, what do you mean? I go, if I bat before I pitch, that means we send eight guys to the plate. He goes, I know, but he says, I've always had bad luck when I got a bat before I pitch. I said, oh, geez, I'll take my chances, Andy.
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about that. Was it tough, too, with the rain that night? But did that just get you more amped up? You had to wait a couple hours or an hour and a half till the game started.
You know what? I was a guy that came to the ballpark the same time when I pitched. I went out and shagged, so I got a lot of that nervous energy out of my system. But I do remember that like it was yesterday. My parents were at the game, and I remember going out into the tunnel behind the locker room, and I happened to walk out there. I was just walking around because it was raining, and I was just trying to stay loose, and my dad walked by. And I looked at him, and I said, "I said, isn't this awesome?" He goes, "Yeah, this is awesome." And he goes, "Are we going to play?" I said, "Yeah, we're going to play." And I just remember it was just weird to run into him in that tunnel because he wasn't supposed to be down there. I don't even know why he was down there. I think he must have had the family pass and they let him in. But, yeah, it's great memories, no doubt. It was a great time in my life, a great time to be a Blue Jay for sure.
Yeah, and we're all hoping that soon again it will be a great time to be a Blue Jay. So before we get to the next caller, let me ask you about three guys that have preceded you on this Blue Jay A Day pregame show over the course of this postseason. We had each of Drew Hutchison, Marcus Stroman, and Aaron Sanchez on the program. And, boy, it really does look like the future's in good hands in this pitching staff.
Well, yeah, that's the trifecta there. Hutchison was really good, I thought. You know, he had a bad stretch there, but all the strikeouts per innings and all that is really a good indicator. Stroman was... I mean, I've already gone on the record earlier this year and said how much better he's done than I thought he'd do. And he's the real deal. I mean, this kid competes. He's got fluidity, and he can, you know, he's got a good breaking ball. And I think I mentioned this before on the air that I think Stroh's biggest thing is he's going to have to learn how to deal. He's going to learn how to deal with those games when he doesn't have his good stuff and he doesn't have his good breaking ball. And that's going to be the difference between him going 16 and 10 or 12 and 12 or 11 and 13. You know, he's going to have to win those games when you're battling. Because you know, you're going to win those games when you got your A stuff. Those games you should win. At least pitch well and give your team a chance to win. So I think Stroh's just got to do a little growing up in that regard. And then Sanchez, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I was so excited when I saw him pitch for the first time in the big leagues. I was watching it on TV. I actually texted Alex. I said, "Holy cow." And we were texting back and forth. It was really neat. I was very excited to see him come from A-ball in Lansing when I was roving to, you know, seeing him do what he's doing in the big leagues right now as a reliever with one pitch. It's very impressive. He's got electric stuff. I remember telling the guys about it in 2011 when I was there with Farrell. Mm-hmm. I remember telling the relievers about this kid that I saw. His name's Sanchez. I said he's got a chance to be like the next Verlander. You know, he's got that kind of stuff. You know, whether he figures it out and all that, you know, time will tell. But yeah, the future looks good, Mike. It does. I'm excited.
It's good that you say Verlander, too, because a lot of people say Doc when they talk about Aaron Sanchez. And I think that may set up expectations a little too high just in Toronto. It would be like saying, you know, it would be like being in Detroit and saying this guy looks like Verlander.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Doc was so polished. I mean, he had, you know, four pitches. He probably could have added a fifth or sixth pitch if he wanted. He could locate him at both sides of the plate. Tremendous work habits, tremendous mental game. You know, he was the total package, and you know, his numbers dictate that. And you know, he was just an impressive player even when he was a rookie. I remember him and Carpenter came up. I don't remember telling Don Welke this. He was the scout that drafted me, and he was with the Rangers. And I saw him 2 years ago in Texas, and he said, "You remember what you told me about?" And I was like, "No, I don't remember." I guess I must have told him in spring training. I said, "Wait till you see these two kids we got, Halliday and Carpenter." And that was when Halliday threw over the top back then.
Yep.
You know, he was straight four seam with a hook. So he is, you know, to put that tag on him is a tough one, I tell you. He's got to go out and do it. You know, the stuff's there, the body's there, the work habits are there. It's now he's got to put his money where his mouth is and go out and perform. And that's the key.
And he'll be 23 years old on opening day next year. So he's got a long way ahead of him. You were 22 when you were in the big leagues for the first time in 1991, and then 50 innings in 92, part of a terrific team out of the bullpen for the most part, and then boom, exploding onto the scene with a 19-9 season in 93 and a win in the World Series. Pat Henken is with us. He is our Blue Jay A Day. We're going to step aside for a second, and when we come back, as is always the case, a lot less of me, a lot more of you. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. It is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show with Pat Henken ahead of Game 7 of the World Series on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
to Baseball Control in Toronto. Mike Wilner here with you. It is our final broadcast of the year. Baseball season's going to end tonight, and that makes me feel a little bit sad, as it always does. I mean, when you come to work doing the same thing every day for 8 months, and then it all stops, it's kind of weird. But I'm anticipating a terrific game, one hopes, in between now and the end of another baseball season. Pat Henken is with us, Blue Jays special advisor, Cy Young Award winner for the Jays in 96, and multiple-time All-Star, World Series champion, all kinds of wonderful stuff. And taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. And Pat, it was different for you, obviously, as a player than it is for me. And I don't know that obviously is a strong enough word. But it's the same thing as far as going to work every day, doing the same thing for 8.5 months. And then it all being over when your season ended. I mean, you played 14 years in the big leagues and only twice did it end with a World Series championship. So other than the disappointment of not having won the World Series in those other 12 years, did it take a few days to kind of reset for quote unquote normal life once the season was over?
You know what? I remember thinking that it was like someone took a 50-pound bag off your chest. You know, that last game, getting that out of the way, the last time you're going to start, season's over, you're not going to be pitching anymore. I just remember being, you know, taking a big, deep breath and just saying, wow, you know, it's over, the season's over. Now it's, you know, let's rest, let's get strong for the winter and get ready for spring training. But I got to be honest with you, I didn't watch much of the playoffs when I played. And I guarantee you that a lot of the current players today are not watching the playoffs. They act like they do. They might act like they watch some of it. They might have it on in the background. But, you know, it's a bittersweet feeling, you know. And then you see your friends out there playing, guys you compete against. And you're like, gosh, man, we were just as good or better than them. And they're still playing and we're at home. So a little bit frustrating, but a little bit of a relief too.
And that makes a lot of sense. All right, I said less of me, more of the callers. So let's get right back to the phones. Basil's in Scarborough. Basil, say hello to Pat Henken.
Hey, Pat and Mike. Pat, as a starting pitcher, do they tend to pace themselves as opposed to a relief pitcher who might go would be throwing at 100%? Would a starting pitcher, knowing he's got to go a lot of innings, go at 90 or 85%? Do they change? Is it a different mindset?
I think you hit it on the head. It's a mindset. I don't think it's so much a physical thing. I never really like tried to pace myself. I always got in trouble. As a matter of fact, I couldn't even throw the get-me-over breaking ball. I had to let it rip like I was throwing at 0-2. So it's everybody's different, but I think for the most part, most of the starting pitchers do not pace themselves. I think that you see the drop in velocity only because of the workload. I don't really think it's because, oh, he's pacing himself and he's savvy and he knows what he's doing and he's saving it for the tank later in the game. I mean, yeah, there might be a few guys out there like that, but I think the majority of the pitchers, like 95% of the pitchers that are starters in that league, are grinding and going as hard as they can, as long as they can, until the manager comes and gets them.
Do you think that's different now than it was when you pitched at the beginning of your career, at least when, you know, the league leader in complete games had more than 3 or 4? And you know, now guys are expected to go give us 6 and give us a chance to win. At the beginning of your career, Henke Award aside, you were expected to pitch 8 or 9 innings.
Yeah, I mean, going in, you're thinking that, but, you know, with 120 pitch count, it's not the easiest thing to do every fifth day. And, you know, there's a lot of things out of your control. There's errors, there's bad calls, there's bad breaks, there's balls that are hit down the line that another inch and they'd be foul. And you get, you know, in all these add pitches to your total amount. And sometimes it just gives you a quick exit because of it. Now, that being said, I was lucky that I played in the era that I played in because I got to see guys like Jack Morris and Dave Steeb and, you know, Dave Stewart, guys that, you know, took a lot of pride in trying to finish the game. And I think that it definitely had a trickle effect on not only my career, but I think a lot of us in that clubhouse.
Yeah, those were some serious, not, I was going to say innings eaters, but that kind of just connotes a guy like an Esteban Loaiza who will go out there and throw 8 and give up 4, 5, 6 innings just to eat the innings. Those guys were superstars and really took pride. I mean, to get to play with both Dave Steeb and Jack Morris, Hey, first of all, for you as a Detroit kid, it must have been unbelievable to be with Jack. But those were the two best pitchers of the 1980s, and you got to be teammates with both of them.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. It was great. I remember my father told me, he used to tell me, whatever those guys do, you do. When they run, you run. When they stretch, you stretch. Watch how much they throw. Go watch their sides. So, yeah, I was lucky. You know, there's no doubt. When I broke in, you know, not to mention Jimmy Key was another great pitcher. Stottlemyre was there. You know, I just had a lot of good guys to look up to, and they were Blue Jays. And I think it was just, it was the Blue Jay way, you know. It was just the way it was. And you know, that's the big key. And Jack, you know, we got Jack from Minnesota the year after he won that big game in the World Series. And, you know, he came over and he just brought a ton of confidence to the pitching staff. And I think that that was one of his biggest assets was, even on days when he didn't have good stuff, talking about Stroman, he tricked himself into thinking he had good stuff. He tricked himself into competing. And I think that that was the big lesson I learned from Jack and from Dave. And that's something that Stroman's going to do. And he will. He'll do that.
Do you believe in the baseball, the old saw that says if you go out and you make 33 starts a year, you're going to have your great stuff 11 times. You're going to be all right 11 times. You're going to have absolutely nothing 11 times?
I mean, it's a general statement. I think that when I played, it was like 12. We used to say 12, 12, 12, same
right.
thing. Yeah, you know, I do think there's some truth to it because think about it. No matter what year you look up on someone's bubblegum card, typically they have 10 wins and 10 losses, even on a good year and then in a bad year. So it does come to the point, you know, it brings me up to the fact that, hey, you got to be able to grind on those games, those 10 games when you don't have your good stuff and things don't go your way. And that's the difference between 16 and 10 and 12 and 12. And so there is some truth to that.
With Pat Henkin, and I've been talking too much. So phone, John, Pottageville. Go ahead with Pat.
Good evening, Mr. Will in there, Mr. Henkin. I just lost the guy's name now. The pitcher for San Francisco pitched 3 days
ago. Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, okay. Question to you, Pat. Coming back off the 3 days, like he had a hell of a game this last game. Like, if they were to put him in tonight, can he actually have the same stuff he had his last game off of 3 games, or is he going to be worse?
It would actually be 2 days rest if Bumgarner pitches tonight, but the question's still valid. What's he going to have?
Right. You know what? Every pitcher's different. Some guys are real sore on day two. Some guys are sore on day one. Some guys aren't sore at all, you know? Bumgarner, with the adrenaline going tonight, it reminds you when Randy came in Arizona years ago, Johnson.
On no rest, that's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that adrenaline will kick over, and once he starts warming up, he's not going to feel a thing. He's going to be out there competing. He's going to be out there trying to win a world championship for his team. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him go out and pitch 3 innings tonight. I honestly could see him pitching 3 innings if he has a quick inning, and he's feeling good, and he's pitching good. You know, he has such good command. He's got good fastball command, so he can elevate, he can throw up and in, he can throw down and away. So it wouldn't surprise me. Even if his stuff's not great tonight, I still think he's good enough to pitch and do well.
I'm sure he's going to pitch tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing what he's got. Victor is in Milton, listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Victor, say hi to Pat Henkin.
Hi, Pat, and hi, Mike. Listen, Pat, you're actually my favorite Blue Jay pitcher, and I'll tell you why. I think of all the Blue Jay pitchers we've ever had, I think you got the most out of your ability, and I respect that because, you know, when I think of all the great, some of the great Blue Jays like Steve, the slider, when I think about you, I think about, you know, competitor, and I think that's something that's lost now, so I really appreciated that. But here is my question. A word that that Alex Anthopoulos mentioned, and nobody said anything about it, the word continuity. And, you know, for me, that's important in all aspects of the game, but especially in the bullpen. And one of the things, an attitude that's prevailing nowadays is, you know what, you just get some guy and just throw him in there. In your opinion, continuity, is that important? And there's a guy that's almost similar to you in terms of temperament, and that's Casey Jansen. And I'm just amazed how we can just discard him and we're not trying to re-sign him. I know he might be expensive, but I thought that guy gets the most out of his ability. And in terms of continuity, rather than throw a kid like Sanchez or some other guy, he's done the job for 3 years. What do you think of the idea about continuity? Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. Have a good night.
Yeah, I appreciate the compliment. You know, yeah, Jansen's a heck of a pitcher. There's no question about it. He's done a fantastic job last 3 seasons, ever since he got the chance to start close. He's got great command. He's a tremendous control pitcher. He doesn't blow people away. He somehow manages to strike people out because his command is so darn good. He catches guys looking on the corners. I understand what you're saying. Here's the deal, though. It has to be a two-way street. You know, Jansen's got to want to come back. He's played 7 years in the big leagues, all with Toronto. He's finally got an opportunity to go out and shop his skills to 30 different teams. And it's a very tempting thing as a position player, as a player, because it's very hard to get to 6 years to become a free agent. Most guys don't even get 6 years in the big leagues to even become a free agent. So Jansen's earned that right. And I think that you'd almost have to, unless they gave him an offer during the year that was just so crazy that he has to take it, I can almost see how he's going to want to play the field a little bit. Let's see, you know, he's from the West Coast. I'm not saying he doesn't like Toronto. He does love Toronto, and he wants to stay. I get that. But that being said, he's a month away from being a free agent, and that's a very tempting thing for any player.
Yeah, it would have to be. And he gave up free agency once to stick with the team on a short extension. So we'll see what happens. When he was on with us, he certainly left the door open to coming back, which would be great because he's been so good for this team for so many years. Time for a couple more calls for Pat Henken. David is in Toronto. Hey, David.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Pat, real pleasure to speak with you. You know, I just want your take on whether or not Brandon Morrow should be converted to a closer.
Okay. You know, I like Brandon. Brandon's got an electric arm. We all know that. He's got a wipeout breaking ball when he's on top of it, hitting on it. I don't know if he's going to consistently throw enough strikes where it's going to be a comforting feeling. I think that over the last 3 years, it's been an extremely comforting. You barely even get your heart rate up in the ninth inning when Jansen comes in because he never beats himself. He holds runners. He fields his position. You know, he just does everything he can do to become a good pitcher in the total package. So would he be a good closer? I mean, he's got closer stuff, but I don't know necessarily mean that that's going to, you know, dictate a great closer. So I think he has to really work on his fastball command. Because you just can't walk guys in the ninth inning. You just can't do it. I mean, as a starter, you can get away with it and pitch around guys, manage through a lineup a little bit, massage your strike zone a little bit. You have time to find your release point. As a closer, I just feel like, you know, you need to be the most consistent strike thrower in the bullpen. That to me, that is the main thing. And if you can't come in and consistently throw strikes, you're not going to pitch in the eighth inning with a lead. You're not going to pitch in the ninth with a lead. The manager's just not going to do it. Nobody feels comfortable. So if Brandon can come into spring training and pound the strike zone and throw nothing but strikes all the time, and then, you know, then I could see him possibly going into the bullpen and being an effective reliever. But just to say, oh, yeah, he's going to go in there and be the closer, I don't know. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. And you know, you're going to have days where you come out there and you're not throwing strikes, and it can get ugly in a hurry.
And nothing makes a manager or a coach's hair turn gray faster than a relief pitcher who just comes out and doesn't throw strikes.
Exactly.
And the same thing and I got to ask you this too, before we let you go. Last night, Yordano Ventura, and I get he's 23 and he's a rookie and he's excited and all this stuff and it's an elimination game, just got a 7-run lead in the second inning. He gets the first out in the third and then walks the next three guys. How infuriating is that to be watching as a former pitcher to see a guy just stake to a massive lead and not, you know, making people put the ball in play?
Right. I think that I was watching that too, and I was thinking to myself, wow, that looks like me when I was about 20 and I was in probably double A or triple A or double A maybe. And I remember I pitched in hope mode. I call it hope mode. I'm hoping to throw a strike. I'm hoping to get this guy out. And when my career turned, it was when I stopped pitching in hope mode and I started pitching like Jack Morris. I know I'm going to get you out. And I think that was the thing with him. I think he went through a two, three batter stretch there where he was like, oh my gosh, I got a 7-run lead. Don't walk him. That little guy on top of his shoulder. And then all of a sudden, he got lucky, threw a ball down the middle, got a ground ball, and got out of it. But that could have got really ugly fast there. You know, they give up a big hit there, and you never know.
Yeah, they were almost right back into the game, and Buster Posey, who hit 490 this year when he put the first pitch in play, swung on the first pitch and grounded into a double play to get out of the inning. Pat, thank you so much. Appreciate all this time you've given us and the great conversation, as always. The tradition on this program with the players is to find a little note about the year that they had a stat that they might not know to send them off on their way. Obviously, I can't do that for this year with you, but I did take a look at your career, and there's one thing that stands out a lot, and I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing you know, but I don't know if you know. Do you have any inkling of what kind of pitcher you were when the bases were loaded?
Oh, no. I hope it's a good stat. I don't know. You know what? Someone asked me a while back if I ever gave up a grand slam, and I couldn't remember. Maybe you can help me. I don't think I did.
You gave up two.
How many?
Two. Just two.
Oh,
that's not bad.
Just two. That's a lot.
14 years in the big leagues, two grand slams is not bad at all. And if you give me half a second.
What did I do when the bases loaded? I didn't pitch well, Mike?
You were never better than you were when you had the bases loaded. I'm looking for the grand slams.
Because there's a force at every base.
Yeah, that's why. You gave up a grand slam to Tony Phillips, and you gave up a grand slam to Dean Palmer, both of them within 2 months of each other in 1993.
Great.
But
yeah, Tony Phillips crushed me.
Which, it's interesting that he hit you for power. He didn't do that to a lot of guys. But for your career, when the bases were loaded, for the whole part of your career, you had a 757 OPS against. When the bases were loaded, it was 509. You held batters to a 212 batting average with a 244 on base percentage, and you gave up four extra base hits in 172 plate appearances against when you pitched in your career with the bases loaded. It's just incredible.
Maybe I should have just walked the first three guys, huh, Mike?
As long as you didn't have to face Tabby, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I played with Tabby, not against.
That's right. He was the best in the world ever with the bases loaded. Yeah, so if you ever go around again, make sure you walk the bases loaded the first time you come into a game. Pat, thank you so much. Again, I look forward to seeing you in the spring. I hope it's a good winter. I wish the best for your dad, and please give him my best. And again, we all appreciate the time, and I can't thank you enough for this.
Oh, no problem. Have me on again. I love it.
I will. I'm not going to have another show till February, but I'll definitely have you on again. There he is. That's Pat Henkin. You look in the dictionary under class act, and you find yourself some Patrick George Henkin right there. It is the Blue Jay Day pregame show, the last one. Game 7's coming up on the Sportsnet Radio Network.